Welcome to Making It the Sweet Way. If you guys looked in your schedule, had a chance to check out at least the information we'll be covering slightly, it's going to be really complicated to try to cover as much information as you probably need to even make maple syrup in 1 hour. It's going to be really difficult. But we're going to try to cover at least a lot of the basics and the important factors in making maple syrup. All right, Mountain State Maple. This is an operation that I started in 2019. Well, much younger. I was much younger than that when I started, but really at a commercial scale, we started in 2019. Since then, we've grown by about 350%. We're now the third largest producer in the state of West Virginia and the largest in southern West Virginia. So if you cut West Virginia in half, we're the largest producer in southern West Virginia. We tap about 7,000 trees. Just to kind of put that into perspective, it covers probably 130 acres of land, and we have about 40 miles of sap tubing in the woods that we maintain, and it's what we essentially use to collect the sap. So I'm one of eight brothers. This is two of them, two of my youngest brothers, and they help me a ton in the woods because I can't do it myself. It's just a large undertaking that takes a lot of energy and time and also manpower, essentially. This is a little bit of the history. This is not what our operation looks like now, but it was this at one point in time. Our family actually stayed in that cabin from time to time, kind of like camping, not really living. And then it got abandoned, and we built a house. But anyway, that's what we used to evaporate our syrup in the early years, and those white jugs we used to actually collect the sap in the first couple years. All right, identifying maple trees, definitely something you need to know in order to make maple syrup. I wouldn't want you going out there tapping palm trees. You might not get much. So maple trees, for sure. I wish I could have you guys like at my operation. We'd go out in the woods and do a fully comprehensive tour. But unfortunately, we're in Florida where there's not many maple trees. So we'll try to cover it here on the screen. The first thing about maple leaves is you really got to just familiarize yourself with them. Look online, find pictures of maple trees online and maple leaves, and try to familiarize yourself with them. Once you start really getting into learning what maple trees are and the different structures and leaf patterns, it'll become easier to identify them. And even on hikes, you'll be able to be like, that's a maple tree, whatever. Yeah, the best thing to identify maple trees is look online for pictures of maple leaves. Essentially, that's the easiest. There's also two other factors. It's the bark. You can tell by the bark. And also the branching pattern. Maple trees is one of two species of trees in the world that has the opposite branching pattern, where they're where it comes the main stem and then they're perfectly off either end in a perfect like Y-ish essentially. All other trees are kind of staggers. There'll be one on the left and then a little bit higher. There'll be one on the right and then a little bit higher. There'll be one on the left. Maple trees and dogwood trees are the only two species of trees that essentially have the paired buds, and then essentially those paired buds will grow into branches. Now, sometimes you will see, like in this right here, where there's only one. The only reason why there's only one there is because sometime in the early growth of that bud, the other one got knocked off. Could have been a windstorm, could have been ice, could have been rain, whatever. Got knocked off, so it discontinued to grow. But if you really look up into the tree, you'll be able to identify that branching pattern that's perfect one way and the other at the same location on the main stem. There it is again. Opposite branching pattern is a maple tree. Alternate branching pattern is all other species except dogwood. Sorry if I'm talking fast. We just got a lot to cover in an hour. All right, so we kind of covered tree identification. One other thing that we want to know, and you can write this down, is the size of the tree. You want to know how many taps to put on a tree. If you put too many, it will kill the tree. A good indication for me when I'm in the woods, I mark the trees first. I go through the forest and I mark all the maple trees. It really gives me a comprehensive idea of how to run my sapline system, and also it helps me count the trees, essentially. And so when I'm actually marking the trees with those ribbons, I wrap my hands around it, and if my fists touch, then it's one tap. If my fists don't touch, it's two taps. And some trees you can have, like, ginormous. They're bigger than that screen in diameter. You can put 3-4 taps. But you don't want to tap anything smaller than 9 inches in diameter. Anything smaller than that, and it can very likely kill the tree. So rule of thumb, if your fists touch when you hug the tree huggers, it is one tap and anything smaller. If your fists do not touch, it's two taps. All right, so as you see here in the picture, one method of collecting, very basic, kind of backyardish kind of style of collecting, is buckets. And you essentially just drill a hole in the tree, bang the little metal spile or tap into the tree, and you hang a little bucket on there. They have multiple different options out there. You just do some research online. They got metal buckets. They have bags now that you can just hang a little bag on the tap. And it fills the bag, and then you just collect the bag and dump it into your tank. That's one method. We used that for a while. The other method is tubing, which I'll pass out this around. You guys can just look at it briefly and just pass it around. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about tubing. The tubing that you're seeing there is 3/16 inch inside diameter. It's very small. Essentially what this does is... it provides a duct for the sap to flow from the tree to your collection tanks. And we'll talk about collection tanks in a little while. But the idea of the 3/16 tubing being so small is that it allows the sap to stay together by capillary action. It stays together and forms a water column inside the tubing. And that water column, as you travel downhill in your slope, that water column is pulling downhill, essentially siphoning the sap out of the tree. So if we go back to our buckets, simply by transitioning from buckets to tubing, it increases your sap flow rate by about 170%. And it also saves a lot of time walking because with the buckets, you actually have to go to each tree and walk and collect it. So the tubing really is helpful for that. We went from the buckets kind of stage to the tubing kind of stage in a couple years. One year we added 5,000 taps in one season, and we used a lot of tubing. Each roll was 1,000 feet, and we used, my goodness, like I said, we have about 40 miles of tubing in the woods. So the tubing is definitely something that helps the sap to, it pulls the sap out of the tree, essentially. It provides a vacuum where it pulls the sap out of the tree, so it increases your rate of production. Let's see, there's some more tubing. All right, so essentially, we'll talk a little bit about tubing. If you go that route, which I do recommend you use tubing, you'll want to, like I said first, you mark the trees, gives you an idea of where the maple trees are and how to run your tubing system. You'll just essentially start at the top of your incline hill. In West Virginia, we have a lot of steep mountains, and so it's really helpful. You just start at the top, and you can just pick your path. And you use the trees to essentially suspend the line. So you pull the line pretty tight, and you go around one tree and around the other, and all the way to get to the bottom. Now, 3/16 tubing, since it's so small, you don't want to overload it. Essentially, I would recommend you don't put more than 20 taps on one lateral. The lateral is this line in a horizontal orientation. That's what is carrying the sap down the tree, down the line. And then this right here, or what you actually have in your hands out there somewhere, it's called a drop. And the drop essentially is what goes from the tree to each tree. There's a drop at each tree. Depending on the size of the tree, you either have 1, 2, 3, 4, essentially. The drop simply takes the sap from the tree into the lateral, and then the lateral is directed down to a main line. The main lines are much bigger. We have from 3/4 to 1 1/4 main lines. And, so that lateral... You want to try to keep, when you're going through the woods, you want to try to keep it in a downward direction, projection. You can go uphill a little bit simply because it does have that natural vacuum. So as long as your highest point and your lowest point are drastically different, like 30 feet in elevation or more, most of our lines there are probably like 300 feet in elevation. So it's really pulling a lot of suction on those lines. But essentially, you want to try to keep everything in a downward projection. You can go uphill, but it kind of like, if you have vacuum and then you go uphill, you don't have vacuum. And then you go back down here, you have vacuum again. So try to keep your laterals in a downward projection. So we talked a little bit about tubing having natural vacuum. That natural vacuum is definitely helpful when it comes to increasing your rate of production. These are just simply lines coming from different areas in the woods, and it comes down into one kind of path, and then it goes into the main line, which you see there. There's some more pictures of the laterals, and if you look really closely, you can almost see the lines in the woods. It almost looks like a spider web. It's a lot. And we have them tapped already in this picture. See that tree right there? That tree is big enough for two taps. So essentially, when I hugged that tree to mark it, it was big enough that my fist didn't touch, and so I was like, that's two taps. So we got that. All right, main lines. Main lines is what carries the sap from the small lines, which you have, or the laterals, into your collection tank. And that right there was probably just, let's see, that was last week. We were putting up 1.25 main line. That's, 500 foot. It's pretty big stuff, and it's hard to handle, especially in the cold. But in any case, that stuff is what carries the sap from your tubing system to your collection tank. That's putting up main line. The main lines do have to have continual even grade, probably no less than 1.5% grade, which is about 15 inches of fall every 100 feet. Anything less than that, and the spaces where there's no suspension, because you can only suspend it like, if 25 feet, try not to suspend it more than 25 feet, because then your line will just have like a sag in it, and then the sap will accumulate in that sag, and then block the vacuum going back up to your system. That's a lot more difficult to put up, because it does have to have continual even grade. All right, so you can kind of see the tubing in the woods. I mean, it's just miles and miles and miles of tubing. One thing I want to talk about is damages. You put up all this new system, and you have windstorm, you have ice storms, you have animals. Animals do a lot of damage to your lines. You will have a lot of damages that you'll need to repair, essentially. Those are just pictures of putting up the main line. Kind of give you an idea. Oh, let me go back to here. All right, so you can kind of see the wire. We use high tensile wire to suspend the main line. You'll just get that really, really tight and then hold your main line to it and then use wire ties to tie your main line up to it. It's pretty basic. You can find a lot of videos on YouTube. YouTube's always a great place to go to learn practical things. Yep, that was the main line. That was, 2,500 feet of main line that we put up last week. All right, here's a picture of the natural vacuum I was talking about. That tap right there is upside down, and it's higher in that lateral, that one lateral. It's higher up, so it does have more vacuum than the trees that are lower down by the main line. But essentially, that the sap that is traveling downward in that lateral is providing a vacuum, a natural vacuum in the system. And it's literally hanging onto my finger there with natural vacuum, just to give you an idea of how that natural vacuum works. Like I said, the tubing versus buckets provides 170% greater sap flow rate than the buckets. All right. We did transition to mechanical vacuum. Mechanical vacuum also increases it by about another 40%. So if you go from buckets to tubing to mechanical vacuum on that tubing, you increase it from what it would be, 170% plus another 40% on top of that. And so we're just trying to maximize our operation as much as possible. Mechanical vacuum is definitely helpful. It helps you find leaks. So like I said earlier, you'll have a lot of damages on the lines. Animals chew into it. Some mice actually will chew holes in it so small, it's like if you get a sewing needle and just like poke it into that 3/16 tubing that you have out there. And then it's hard. It's very difficult to find. The mechanical vacuum, it pulls extra vacuum, so you can just like walk through the woods on a quiet day where there's like low wind, and you can hear those leaks just whistling, and then you can just travel up to them and fix them. We went from that mechanical vacuum, which is simply diaphragms that I put together in a tandem, and we went to this vacuum pump right here. This vacuum pump is high vacuum. It'll pull easily 29.9 inches of mercury, which is essentially what they use to measure vacuum. It is designed to run 24/7 from the start of the season to the end of the season. So that right there really increases production by a long shot. It's all an investment. It's very I'll put it straight out there. It's expensive. Unless you're trying to do it just like hobby backyard, make yourself a couple gallons for you and your family. That's great. That's what we did for years. If you're gonna go commercial, it's expensive. Very expensive. All the equipment is high dollar, and it's built to last though. So essentially, everything that you invest is for long term. This right here is a refractometer. Let me see where I am here. My notes. All right, sap composition. We're going to talk about sap composition a little bit. Sap is essentially almost water. It might have 2% sugar in it. 2% sugar converted to syrup is like 50 gallons of sap to 1 gallon of syrup. Very seldom do you actually see 2% sugar. Most of the time for us, it's about 80 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. So it takes a lot of processing to do that. This is simply a device that measures the sugar content in the sap. It's a refractometer. Give me a sec. I'm not a preacher, by the way. All right. So not only is there sugar in your sap, there's also minerals. The ground gives sugar, but also gives minerals. The minerals will condense when you evaporate it. When you evaporate it, it condenses the sugar. It also condenses the minerals. Minerals actually solidify, and they become what you call sugar sand in your evaporators. We'll talk about that later, but yeah, you'll want to clean that sugar sand out from time to time because it will scorch and then give your syrup an off flavor. All right, now, what causes trees to give sap? It's called the freeze-thaw cycle. Essentially, you need to be in a region where you have cold temperatures. Florida is not ideal. You're not going to make syrup in Florida at all. Sorry to say that. Tennessee, make syrup in Tennessee, North Carolina, West Virginia, and then all of the Northeast, pretty much, you can make syrup. All right. The freeze-thaw cycle essentially is what happens when you have temperatures that dip below freezing, and then you have temperatures that dip above freezing pretty consistently. That's what gives the trees the ability to produce sap. What happens in that cycle is in the freeze, the trees build up pressure, and then when it thaws, they release the pressure. And the trees will only give sap if you have that freeze-thaw cycle. Essentially, the time of year that you have that temperature pattern pretty regularly is usually end of January to about the middle of March, at least for us. In Canada, which is where they produce most of the maple syrup, their season is much later. It's like it goes into April, sometimes a little bit into May. They still have freeze-thaw temperatures. There's also some other factors that force the sap out of the tree. It's also root pressures. The roots in your tree system, they essentially absorb that water and sugar from the ground, and then it's also forced by osmosis. It's forced up the tree, and then that's where you get your sap. Trees make more than enough sap to survive, and so the sap that we take from the tree is simply called surplus sap. It's enough that doesn't kill the tree, but it's also not it's also yeah, it's not too much that it kills the tree. It's just enough for us to still make some syrup, essentially. Let's see here. All right. So now, how to tap the tree? There's a couple different factors that you want to consider. If you've ever seen a cross section of a tree, like a firewood log or something, you'll notice that the outside area of the tree is lighter in color. The actual wood is lighter in color, and then toward the center of the tree is darker in color. The core is darker in color. The core, nothing really happens there. It's simply like the backbone of the tree. It just helps keep it structured. The outside area of the tree, which is called the phloem, that's where all the life of the tree happens, right beneath the bark. And in the phloem is where you want to have your tap hole. When you drill the tree, you don't want to go past that phloem into the core or the dead wood of the tree, because then sap will actually escape back to the core of the tree, and then you're losing your production. So essentially, rule of thumb, not more than 2 inches deep. You don't want to drill more than 2 inches deep inside in your tree. Any deeper than that, you could be drilling into your core wood and then losing sap that way. If you go any shallower than that, it's not going to hurt anything, but it's going to not give you as much sap, because you want more exposed tap hole inside the tree as much as possible, where it's not, like I said before, it's not drilling into the core, and you'd be losing the sap that way. All right, we talked about sap to syrup ratio. Collection methods. Oh, that's tapping. That's just a day when me and my brothers go tapping. Lots of drills, and we get a lot done. Anyway, so that right there is a tap inside of a tree. This was just, was it this week? Yeah, this week. We started tapping this week up in West Virginia. You can kind of see inside that clear tap, there's like air bubbles right there. Those are really not air bubbles. It's gases that the tree releases as well. So if you think you see air bubbles, it's not always a leak. If it's close to the tap, it's probably gases that the tree releases into the lines. All right, we're going to talk about bacteria. So what happens when you drill a hole in a tree is you create a wound in the tree. It's as if you cut yourself. And then if you don't protect that wound, or you get bacteria in that wound, it reacts and it tries to get rid of that bacteria. The same thing with a tree. You make a wound into the tree, and then if that tap had bacteria on it when I banged into the tree, that tap hole reacts to that bacteria and it starts closing up. So sterilization is definitely something that you have to maintain making maple syrup if you want a higher rate of production. Bacteria makes those tap holes close up prematurely, and then your season essentially ends a lot sooner than it should or could. All right, so you can see the bacteria in that tap right there. It's pretty much got the whole thing closed off. The tree does heal up. So once you make that wound into the tree and you drill that tree, it does heal up. You can kind of see there that beneath, like, that's the bark. That's where the previous season was. That's where we tapped. But the tree underneath of there has already healed up. There's not actually a hole 2 inches deep there anymore. It's healed up completely. All right, we're going to talk about damages in animal, the way the animals have effect. See that right there? That's simply just been chewed up by a mouse. I don't know. It looks like he was bored there for a while. But anyway, they do like the plastic. They do like those kinds of things, and they will damage your systems. So you, during and throughout the season, you do have to go back to your sugar bush and try to look for those damages and leaks, because it simply just destroys your vacuum. The vacuum that you had in your system, you just created an air leak, and it simply just lets all that air into your system, and then you don't have that extra 170% greater sap flow increase by the natural vacuum of the tubing system. There was some main lines that we had. Literally, this was last week. We put the main lines up, and then we had a really bad windstorm. Tree that the main lines were actually attached to broke and fell. And so, yeah, the Lord definitely has a way of teaching us patience. All right, collection systems. You'll want to pick ideal collection tanks. A lot of guys use these plastic tanks. Plastic is not what you want to collect. Plastic is very hard to keep sterile. Stainless, if you can get your hands on stainless tanks, that's ideal. And then clean them regularly. I'll show you a picture here. See that right there? That is toward the end of the season. As the end of the season, you know, approaches, temperatures start to get higher and bacteria and microbial growth increase. And you can see that yeast development inside the stainless steel tank. And I literally clean that tank out every time I collect it. So that's one collection to another. It develops that much bacteria. Now, bacteria doesn't essentially mean that your sap's bad. Discoloration doesn't even mean that your sap's bad. You can see the sap there is really discolored. During the early part of the season, the sap looks and tastes just like water. It's very clear. Like I said, it has like up to maybe 2% sugar, so you can't really taste the sweetness. The really big indicator that is going to tell you if your sap is bad is the smell. If it smells really nasty, just dump it because your syrup will be less than ideal. So yeah, you'll want to get your hands hopefully on some stainless steel tanks. Wash them regularly after every single collection. There are a few different factors that contribute to microbial growth. Light, sunlight. Sunlight feeds microbes, makes them come alive, and they love sugar. So it's kind of a lose situation because you're wanting the most sugar you can possibly get out of your sap. And so when you expose your sap to light, it kind of gives life to the microbes. The microbes start breaking down the sugars. Temperature. The cooler the sap, the longer it will stay preserved. You want, some people like take their time and they might collect and then hang on to it for a few days and then start evaporating. Bad idea. If I could have, let's say I collect, have a 1,000-gallon tank and it fills up and it has, let's say I have 800 gallons and it fills up and I have 2% sugar. 800 gallons will give me, let's see here, that'd probably give me about 40 gallons of syrup, if I'm calculating that right. 40 gallons of syrup at 2% sugar. In a matter of simply 12 to 24 hours, that 2% can drop to 1.5%. And so your ratio of sap to syrup went from 50 gallons of sap to 1 gallon syrup to 66 gallons of sap to 1 gallon syrup. And you didn't do nothing except it was in an environment where it was exposed to like microbial growth essentially, and the sugar content was diminished by those bacterias. So temperature, you want to keep your sap cool if possible. If you're going to put your collection tank, try to keep it down in like a valley, or the best thing to do honestly is process it as fast as you can. The faster you process your sap, the sooner you process your sap, the more syrup you're going to get per gallon of sap. All right, there's another factor that contributes to microbial growth and diminishment of your sugar content, and that's oxidization. Oxidization happens when your sap is agitated. And so those main lines that I was showing you earlier, those contribute slightly to sugar diminishment in your sap. It's not a whole lot, not super significant. The time that you save by that sap running all the way to your building or your collection point, it kind of like evens out the sugar diminishment, essentially. So agitation, simply what happens is the oxygen kind of also breaks down the sugar as well. So the idea to process your sap is soon in a cool and dark environment, okay? So your collection tank, you want your collection tank cool and dark. Essentially, if it's a sealed stainless steel tank, great. And you want to process it as soon as possible to get the most syrup out of your sap. All right, let's see here. Processing. We're going to move to processing here. Let's see here. Oh, there's a little brother of mine cleaning the tank. So you see that picture right there? That's some really nasty sap. That's toward the end of the season. This right here is toward the beginning of the season. It looks like pool water. It's really clean, clear, and in the beginning of the season, it's ideal, and it has a higher sugar content as well. All right, processing. This right here is a reverse osmosis. Not everybody has the luxury of this machine. This particular machine, you can find really small models, even like that are fit inside of a 5-gallon bucket. This machine right here processes about 1,800 to 2,000 gallons of sap per hour. And what it does is it uses high pressure to force water molecules through a semi-permeable membrane. The semi-permeable membrane is too dense to allow sugar molecules to pass through it, so it essentially like filters the water out of your sap. It removes 90% of the water. So if I have, in a day, I could collect 10 to 20,000 gallons of sap on a good sap flow. It will remove 90% of that. 10,000 gallons, it'll just dump 9,000 gallons of water. Now that cuts my processing by a long shot. And increases my, because I'm processing it faster, it increases my rate of sap to syrup ratio. All right? So you can, like I said, you can find these reverse osmosis as small as a 5-gallon bucket. They literally fit in, it's called the RO bucket. And what that does is it processes your sap by high pressure. So that will help you a lot. And you can pick those up for, if you have a small operation, you pick those up for $500 or so. Let's see here. All right, this is the early stages of evaporation. Evaporator. There's many multiple methods of evaporation. We started simply just evaporating in a pan in my parents' wood stove in the house. And that worked for a few years. I think we made 2 gallons the first year. We had like 25 taps. We had 2 gallons the first year. And let's see, I was probably 13. And we thought we were banging it. It was awesome. We sucked every drop out of the filters. It was pretty awesome. All right. So, and then we kind of transitioned to a more sophisticated evaporator, and that was a lot of fun. I maxed that evaporator out. I built my own reverse osmosis system, the very first one I had. It processed about 400 gallons an hour, and I just got parts offline, put it all together, and it worked very well for 3 seasons, I think. And then I maxed that evaporator out. That was only 2-foot by 6-foot evaporator. And the last year that I used it, I made like 385 gallons of sap, of syrup, sorry. That was a lot of processing. And we basically cut and hand split firewood for the entire season. That was, needless to say, that was the last year I did that. I'm like, never again. That was way too much work. All right, so that was out in the building. Then the next year, we went to inside the building, poured concrete. So just every year made some progression. That machine back there that you see right there, that's the reverse osmosis. Sorry for you guys in the back, you can't really see. But that's the reverse osmosis that I initially built. I since retired it. This is the latest evaporator. It's 3.5 feet by 13 feet long. The total length, that's the pan dimensions. The total length is probably 16 feet long. So it's very, very large. It evaporates 160 gallons an hour. And it's pretty much fully autonomous. So once the sap starts flowing into the building, I simply just start the machines, and on the other side, it simply comes out syrup. So that makes life really, really easy. All right, let's see here. All right, so how long or how far should we boil our sap before we get to syrup? There is legal density to syrup, and it's what they use... They use a term called bricks, and it's 66 bricks. It's simply just a term to measure the density of the syrup. You don't want guys out there not boiling their, like, you know, not really getting to that syrup point because they're making a little bit more, and then you open your syrup bottle and you pour it in your pancreas, and it's really liquidy like water. So there's a legal density. This is something you do want to write down. Syrup is 7 degrees above the boiling point of water at your elevation. Now, let's talk a little bit about elevation. Elevation is a huge factor in affecting your boiling point. Technically, you probably learned this in like first or second grade, boiling point of water is like 212. Well, that's only at sea level. It changes a lot as you go up in elevation, simply because the barometric pressure changes. It decreases as you go up in elevation. So you can probably look this up online, just say, hey Siri, what's my elevation? And then be like, okay, that's my elevation. And then be like, hey, Siri, what's the elevation at your elevation? Or there's technical ways to find that out. You can just boil a pot of water and then with a thermometer and tell, you know, when your water is starts boiling, hard boiling, and then add 7 degrees to that, and that's when your evaporation of the syrup gets to syrup. All right, 7 degrees above the boiling point of water at your elevation. For us, it's, I think boiling point of water is like a little bit over 207. And so syrup is like 214 and a half, 215. So that's what I set my thermometer. That device right there, for those of you who can see it, it's a temperature control modulating valve, and I just simply set the temperature at like 215. I try to go a little bit heavy because I'd rather be able to add a quart of water to like 30 gallons of syrup to get it just right than to have to take the syrup and put it on a pot on the stove and evaporate it for half an hour. So I just run a little bit heavy, which is always a good idea. That temperature control modulating valve simply opens as soon as it gets to the set temperature, which is like 215. All right. Yep, you'll want to write down that temperature indication. There's another device that we use to measure the density. It's just simply a hydrometer. There's different different styles of hydrometers. I use a glass hydrometer, and simply it at a certain temperature, you read your temperature of the syrup, and then it'll measure, that hydrometer will float at a certain density, essentially. So the colder the syrup, the more it'll float, but you can match your density by your temperature as well. Still good on time. All right, sterilization again. You want to keep your stuff clean, very, very clean. The cleaner you, the more sterile your environment, the greater rate of syrup you're going to make throughout your season. Yeah, I can't really emphasize that enough. You want to keep stuff clean. I've seen some operations where there's just nasty environment, crud everywhere, and it's just like, yeah, I wouldn't even want your syrup, man. So, yeah, you want to keep your stuff clean. Those are not beer kegs in the back. Disclaimer, just want to say that. Even though they look exactly like beer kegs, the equipment company takes those and they put a different adapter on them and then sell them to us producers, and that's what we store our syrup in. All right. Filtration. Like I said before, give me a second. I thought there was videos here. I apologize. Anyway, like I said before, when you condense your sap to syrup, you're condensing the sugar, but also you're condensing all the minerals that the tree gives. Those minerals solidify into nitre, which is simply a name for condensed minerals. Simple terms, sugar sand. It will develop in the bottom of your pan, and that sugar sand, if you don't clean out that sugar sand, it will begin to scorch in the bottom of your pan and then give your syrup a really bad off flavor. All right, preservation and hot packing. The way you want to keep syrup is hot pack it, a lot like you do canning. I'm sure a lot of you have canned before. It preserves it for a long time. It's pretty much almost all sugar, so it really can't go bad unless it's in a bad environment or unless you've introduced it to bacteria. So you want to keep, when you hot pack it, I hot pack it in those drums in the back, about 190 degrees, and then I seal it, and it's good for years. The quality doesn't even diminish after, you know, 2 or 3 years. You open it up, syrup tastes just as good as when you made it. All right, glass is a great way to preserve your syrup, the best way, actually. A lot of times you go to Costco or Sam's Club, whatever, and you find your syrup in a plastic bottle. Some people are kind of like ultra health conscious and they don't like plastic. Glass is the best way. It doesn't release any toxins into your syrup. All right, so glass is the best way. Not really sure why this is in the order that it is. Evidently, it didn't upload the videos. Anyway, all right, so filtration. There's a lot of different ways to filter. If you're just starting out basic, you can simply use a cheesecloth. That works great. It doesn't take out all of the minerals. A lot of the fine particles will still pass through a cheesecloth. You'll want to... I use what's called a filter press, and it simply uses a high pressure pump, and it pushes the hot syrup. You want to put hot syrup through there. It passes through easier, And then I mix what's called diatomaceous earth into my syrup. Sounds really nasty, but I put a lot of that into my syrup. And what that does is it provides a medium of buildup onto these simple paper fabrics, and then it helps filter the syrup out. On the other end, there's absolutely no diatomaceous earth whatsoever, and it filters out completely, and it's pure and clear. All right, any questions so far? Yes, sir. How many gallons do I produce in a day of syrup? It depends on the on essentially the how much sap I've collected. Like I said, there's a lot of different factors that determine how much sap you get. The greater the freeze, something I didn't mention earlier, the greater the freeze, the harder the freeze, the greater the thaw, the more the trees are going to produce sap. Okay, so let's say I have temperatures of like teens, and then it gets up to like mid-40s. That's really ideal. You're going to make a lot of syrup with those environments. Now, if I collect, it depends also, one other thing, it depends on the sugar content of the day. Earlier in the season, the sugar, really early in the season, the sugar is kind of low, and then it kind of increases, and then toward the end of the season, it kind of decreases again, because there's the environment starts to not be ideal, and there's those temperature factors and increased microbial growth as well, and then it decreases my sugar content. But if let's say I collect, like I said before, I can collect anywhere from 10 to 20,000 gallons of syrup, of sap on a good day, and my rate of production is about 70 to 80. We'll just do 70. So I can make 214 gallons of syrup in a day. How much syrup per year? So the season where we are usually lasts between 6 to 8 weeks, and it doesn't flow every day. Like, you have to have that freeze thaw for it to flow. So we could have a few days of freeze completely. It won't flow at all. When it thaws, it'll start flowing. If it stays warm above freezing, it'll flow for about 3 days, and then the trees will start shutting down again. So the more you have that pattern of freeze-thaw, you'll get a better season. Obviously, we can't dictate that. We can pray about it hard, but so those freeze-thaw cycles really what determines how much syrup, how much sap you get, essentially how much syrup you make. So it depends on every year. Every year is different. Some seasons are really bad. This is just a side hustle, by the way, because you can't, I don't know, if a lot of your farmers, you really depend or determine from season to season. It's very, very variable. So this is simply just a side hustle, and I could produce anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 gallons of syrup annually, and the season, like I said, is about 6 to 8 weeks. Yep. So a good way to rate it, well, you could test your sugar. If you have trees that are like standing on a tree line or fence line or out in an open field, your sugar is going to be a lot higher simply because the structure of the tree is more like a bush. If you go into the forest, you have a really long base trunk, and then the top where the crown is just a few branches. Out in a field, you have I've seen maple trees that are just, they look like a bush. And those trees, sometimes they'll give like 6-7% sugar. Now, 6-7% sugar, you're making, let's see here. It's like 16 gallons of sap to 1 gallon of syrup. So, of course, we don't have trees like that everywhere. But yeah. So, what was your question again? A good average is a pint of syrup per season per tap. So, a pint of syrup, 16 trees would produce you about 2 gallons of syrup. Now, if your family gets really hooked on syrup, you know, me and my brothers, you know, we can go through, I don't know, 2 gallons a month maybe. You had a question? Very good question. So the reverse osmosis machine that I showed earlier, that right there, the membranes actually start to plug up after a while. So after I process probably 10 or 12,000 gallons of syrup, they start to like really pressurize. And so what I do with that permeate, which is the pure water that you're talking about, I save most of it, maybe a couple thousand gallons of it, and I use that pure water to then wash the membranes out. And so that's what I do now. Now, there are some people, and you can look this up online, there are some people who actually bottle that water because it's purified water. If you buy a gallon jug of water from a grocery store, look on the back of it, it says purified by reverse osmosis. So that water is simply as pure as water you get from the store. I'm not in a position where I can bottle that, but it's something definitely that I've considered. And I've talked to electrical engineers and stuff, and they'd be willing to help me develop a system where we can bottle that water instead of dump it. Because like I said, I could process 150,000 gallons of sap. And so I'm dumping 135,000 gallons of permeate per season. If I could get 60 cents or 80 cents out of a gallon, it'd be something to look into. But yeah, was that all right? Any other questions? What was your question? I don't sanitize the jars and the lids. They're kind of like already, they come brand new in kind of a sterile environment. The caps are actually plastic. And so I simply just hot pack it, screw the cap on, tip the jug over on the side. That helps the seal to actually make a really good seal around the rim of your jar or jug, essentially. Yep. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Say that again. Ideally not, because if you leave that tap in the tree, which with 7,000 taps, the chances of a tap being left in the tree are very likely. And I come across them, not too often, but I tapped 2,900 taps last week, and I came across maybe half a dozen taps still in the tree. I pull that tap out. That tap hole has done nothing. If it didn't have any bacteria introduction, that tap hole is still as like when I drilled it. It's nothing has healed or anything. But you want to pull that tap out of the tree so it gives the tree a chance to heal over. If you don't, then you pull that tap out, and then you just drilled another hole for this season. Now you got two wounds in the tree. The chances of your tree dying are pretty likely. As soon as the season's over, pull the tap. Yep. And really what determines your season being over is when you stop having those freeze-thaw cycles. So, for instance, last year, the season was less than ideal. The first 10 days of February, we made a lot of syrup, and then it got warm. And like I said before, with those warm days consistently, day after day, the sap stops flowing, and the trees essentially, you know, that's it. And they start healing up. That warm environment gives them the chance to start closing up. I think it got cold the middle of March, like March 13, 14, and I went and retapped most of the system, which was a big undertaking, simply to try to make more syrup. And I some of the holes I re-drilled, some guys do that. They'll re-drill the tap hole at the end of the season just so they can get another week and a half or 2 weeks of the season. I drilled some of the holes again, and then others I just drilled a brand new hole above or below. Now, it did give me some syrup. It flowed really well for a few days. But I wouldn't do it again simply because 7,000 taps, it's a huge undertaking and not really worth me going out there, killing myself and my brothers, retapping. Any other questions? Yes, sir. So that would be something I could do for that my great-grandkids would benefit from, essentially. I mean, it's a legit question, definitely. I mean, there's guys that in New England, there's operations that have been for 150 years, and they've what they've done is not so much actually plant their own maple forest, but what they've done is they've thinned out natural forests for so many years that there's nothing left now but maple trees. And that's really ideal because you get rid of the unhealthy trees, you get rid of all the other species of trees, and you leave a really good environment for maple trees to develop and flourish, essentially. And your sugar, like I said before, the bigger the crown on the tree, the more sugar content is going to be in your sap. And so what they do is they do TSI, timber stand improvement, forest management, and they do that to their forest. They essentially like cultivate their forest to have a better environment. And it increases after years. I mean they have trees that consistently give like 4%, which is like 25 gallons of sap to 1 gallon of syrup. So it's definitely something to do. A little disclaimer, most of the trees that I'm tapping are not on our land. My neighbor lets me tap. His farm is a little bit higher in elevation. We're like down in the holler or valley. I don't know if you guys know what a holler is. Holler is just a really steep valley where no sunshine exists. Anyway, his farm is higher in elevation. And so essentially those higher in elevation areas have a higher concentration of maples. Usually anything above 3,000 feet, you're going to see a lot of sugar maples. which talking earlier about the species, I didn't talk too much about it because of time, but there's many different species of maple trees. The best maple tree for making syrup is the sugar maple. Essentially, on average, it gives more sugar, has a higher sugar content than any other maples. Now, there's lots of different maple species, varieties out there, but the sugar maple is the one that you want to look for. And then do your research, find out what sugar maples actually are, how to identify them, the leaves, the bark structure, and those are the ones you really want to target. Question. Yeah, good question. He asked, what other trees can you tap that will actually make syrup? So a lot of your softwood trees will give sap that'll make syrup. None quite so much as a maple tree. Essentially, that's why it's the one that's really in production. Now, there are different trees that actually give syrup. It's different flavor. It doesn't taste like maple at all. But birch, sycamore, hickory, black walnut. There's guys that are just experimenting with it. The syrup's very interesting. Some of the trees don't even really flow that well. You almost have to provide vacuum for it to suck it out of the tree because it just doesn't give enough. Maple trees, on the other hand, I don't know why I didn't upload the videos, but maple trees, like, you drill the tree and like it comes out like dripping, doot, 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 doot. Like it flows very well out of a maple tree. Question? Yes, so he's right on. Now there's definitely a lot of different, this industry is progressive and it's developing constantly, all right? So he asked, is there different kinds of taps that we use? And yes, there is. I've tried multiple different kinds of taps. The one that you saw on that drop is just simply a clear tap. I can just hand these to you. So those are the different kinds of spiles or taps that we use. There's one in there that's kind of like a bright green. Yeah, that one right there. So when that one comes around, check it out. That one right there costs about 3 times the price. It's about 45 cents a piece. But somebody developed that one with, they incorporated silver ions inside the tap material. And essentially what those silver ions do is inhibit the growth of microbes. So it's going to increase your production and lengthen your season a little bit because those silver ions inhibit the microbial growth inside your tap hole, which keeps your tap hole open longer, which increases, like lengthens the duration of your season. They do cost 3 times as much on average than the other plastic taps, but one advantage to those is that they're good for 3 years. The other taps, ideally, you want to replace them every single year. Essentially. And then the drop, which you guys had earlier, the drop you also want to replace every 3 years. Which that's a good question. I'll talk a little bit more about bacteria and microbial growth. Most of the bacteria in your system occurs in the laterals, main lines, and collection tanks. But it also does occur in your drop. Let's see if I can go back to this picture. Never mind. All right. So the drop does start to develop bacteria, and it starts significantly affecting your production after the 3rd year. And so you want to replace that drop. What happens is most of the bacteria is in the lateral, which is that line in a horizontal orientation. But as the bacteria builds up, it travels up this drop right here. And then when it gets to the tap hole, it starts closing up your tap hole, essentially. So you want to replace these every 3 years, but the tap you want to replace every single year, except for that one green tap. It's called a zap back tap, if you're interested in writing that down. The zap back tap is essentially, like I said, 3 times the price, but it's good for 3 years. You don't have to replace it. Now, they're still doing research constantly to find out which kinds of plastics and materials have the least negative effect on your system. But as of right now, that green zap back tap, it's my go-to, essentially. That's what I've used. But like I said, it's almost 50 cents a piece. They last for 3 years. How do I clean in between? I don't clean the tap at all. Not that particular one doesn't have to be cleaned. But after the 3rd year, yeah, I'll cut that tap off after the 3rd year. Yep. Question? I haven't tried the check valve tap. I've asked about it. The response I got was that on bigger operations, you see more of the likelihood for those check valve little plastic balls to get stuck. And then, so if they get stuck, it's pretty, and they cost a lot more. With the new vacuum system that I have, it's designed to stay on 24/7 from start to finish of the season. With that, I don't really need a check valve because it's constantly having that really high vacuum effect on the tap. Any other questions? Essentially, so he asks, by incorporating high vacuum to your system, does it have the effect of putting two taps on a tree that's essentially too small and it could kill the tree? It does take a lot more sap, like you said, 210%, whatever it is. Now, the only difference is that if I were to put two taps on that tree, it would be creating an extra wound, and then the tree has to really work hard in the off season to heal up. So that one wound on the smaller trees is ideal under high vacuum than two taps on that small tree, where it increases the chances of it dying, essentially. Question? Yeah, so, man, I wish those videos would upload it. There was so much in that. He asked, do I have to, like, prime the lateral lines for the sap to start flowing? The trees actually have some significant pressure. And so once that pressure in the tree gets into the sap line, there's a point there where it's the pressure and the suction, the siphon effect matches, and then the siphon effect increases. And so that's really, at the first season, it does that the first day, essentially. And then after that, your laterals are full of sap all the time. And as soon as you tap the next season, they're flowing already with vacuum. Question? So 9 inches in diameter, I wouldn't tap anything less than 9 inches in diameter. The age of the tree is hard to tell unless you cut the tree down. But 9 inches in diameter, depending on your environment, where we are, 9 inches would probably be about 18 years old, 15 to 18 years old. Yep. Any other questions? Yes. So she asked, is there a difference between the grades and colors of the syrup? A while back, they were grading syrup like grade A, grade B. I don't know if it was grade C or not. They kind of did away with that, simply for the fact that they were grading grade A syrup as the light syrup and more delicate flavor. It didn't really have a strong maple flavor. The darker syrup had a stronger maple flavor, and they were finding that people were actually wanting that richer maple flavor in a darker syrup rather than the light stuff, and they were willing to pay just as much for it as the light stuff. Now, the light stuff, reason why they just thought it was a better product because it was lighter and more delicate and clear, I don't know what they decided for that. But they kind of did away with that. Now they have different subcategories of grade A. They have like grade A, light, delicate flavor. They have grade A, amber, medium, and then grade A, dark, rich, robust. So there's different categories of grade A, but essentially all of this grade A, unless it's essentially completely off flavored, then it's not, like, you can't really even sell it as syrup. Toward the end of the season, your syrup will definitely start getting an off flavor. Yes. Do the different grades affect the nutritional value? Typically, the darker stuff has a higher mineral content. I had one lady ask for unfiltered syrup. I don't really know why she wanted unfiltered syrup. Tastes really nasty. But she did a lot of research on the minerals that come from a maple tree. And she's like, wow, this stuff has, like, you know, these powers or whatever, healing powers. And they, like, you know, help cell reproduction and this and that, whatever. And so she was actually taking that unfiltered syrup like a supplement, like a tablespoon a day. I wish I would have got all of her research on it. It would have been interesting. But, yeah, typically the darker syrup does have a higher mineral content than the lighter syrup. Yes, sir. Your own liability is really important to consider. unless you're selling to friends and family, simply like where we started, how I got to this point was, you know, we made some for ourselves and then like, oh, I'll give it to some friends and to relatives. And then they were like, oh, I want more. So then we increased from like 25 taps to like 125 and then like 300 and then 700 and 1600, 1900 and 7,000 now. But definitely something to consider if you're going to sell it commercially. You do want to be licensed. You want to be insured. You want to be covered essentially, because even though there's not really much in syrup to go bad, there's always people out there that are going to, you know, there's always people out there that are going to try to target you somehow, and so you want to be covered. Yep. Yes. Is maple sugar just as good? I'm assuming you're asking from like a health perspective or taste. Okay, so she asks, is maple sugar as good as maple syrup? All maple sugar is syrup that has been condensed a little bit more. It's just been put on a pot, on a stove, and evaporated a little bit more and turned into sugar. And all they do is just like evaporate more and then start stirring it and it turns to sugar. So it's just as healthy. It's just as healthy as maple syrup. Yes, yes. Question? Yeah, so he asked, I mentioned that I tap trees on my neighbor's farm, which is higher in elevation. By God's grace, he lets me tap for free. If I was to lease land, it's actually not much to lease land. In New England, there's a lot of people who do that. They lease the land, and then it's for a small portion. But yeah, they'll develop contracts and stuff for like, you know, 10 years, 30 years, whatever they desire, essentially. But yeah, there's a lot of people who lease land. For sure. Any other questions? Yeah, sorry guys about the videos. If you have any questions, let's see. I can't really turn that on. If you have any questions, just come find me. I'll be wearing my merch here, so if you see this, you know I taught the class. And unless you forget my terrible face. Anyway, just contact me. Now, I'm going to set a couple catalogs out here just so you can like brief through and look at the different equipment and stuff like that. They have stuff here for small operations, like, you know, 25 taps if you want to make a couple gallons. They also have stuff here for mega operations, up to 500,000 taps. But you guys are more than welcome to come look through that. Other than that, if there's no more questions, we're kind of out of time. I could have talked more about marketing and stuff like that. Yes, sir. Did I bring any to sell? Very good question. I did. I'd be a bad businessman if I didn't. So out in the food trailer, that's my brother out there and his wife. They have an exhibit somewhere around here. Oh, it's right over here somewhere. Yeah, so they're selling a lot of their bakery goods, and they're also selling syrup. Out by the food trailer, I'll actually be selling, and I only brought 1 gallon. I don't know if it's sold or not yet. But yeah, we do have some other stuff. I will be making maple cotton candy. You'll want to try that, all right? So I'll be out there by the food trailer later today. You'll want to try that. Yeah, there is maple syrup. There will be maple syrup over here at the table. All right, I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much. Like I said, if you have any more questions, just give me a shout.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.